The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening and welcome back to our five-week intro to meditation class, the second week. If you didn't come last week, that's okay. I think that what's presented today will catch you up well enough that you can follow along. Can everyone hear okay? Okay, so I remind everyone that there are these hearing assistant devices. So if anytime you feel like you need it, they're on the cabinet right outside there. So there's a box full of these little devices, and they work very well. You can even walk outside with them nearby and get fresh air and listen, whatever you need. So I see that people are still coming in. So one way to start is to just see if any of you have any questions about the instructions last week or your meditation at home, if you tried it. Anything that came up for you that you'd like to ask about or simply report about? Some of you tried meditating at home? And how many of you found it rewarding to do so? Did some of you find it rewarding? How many found it challenging? Yeah, more people found it challenging. It might be better, it might be more useful to have it challenging than rewarding. Maybe some of the people who said it was rewarding found it rewarding because it was challenging. There you go. So anything that you want to say about the challenges that before we get started, get a sense of what they are? And
After hold it closer, is this better? Okay. So after I felt the stream of thoughts running through my head and felt like the stream had died down, I felt like really strong emotions come up. And have had trouble sitting with those. And I read your chapter in the book, which was informative. And I just wondering, in the sense was you talked about these different types of reactions or different ways we can approach these emotions. And which one do you think is good to start with of the four? I can't remember exactly what they were.
The four emotions?
No, not the emotions. the way the emotions come up. And
oh,
you can
choose
to
just recognize it.
Recognize
is usually the good place to begin. So he asked about, he said when the flow of emotions quieted down.
The flow of thoughts quieted down,
he was surprised by the emotions that came up. And that's relatively common because often enough, our discursive thoughts, you know, keep us entertained or engaged or concerned or something and keeps us at a distance from our emotional life for some people. And so when the thinking mind quiets down, then the backlog of emotions, the stuff that's underneath there that you haven't been paying attention to, can show itself. And we consider that to be a good thing. It's a good thing. And so then you're asking what to do. Come back next week. Next week we'll talk about emotions. But I think that for this point in the series, what I'd recommend is to be very generous to yourself, very compassionate to the arising of emotions, and be very allowing of them. Try to avoid seeing it as any kind of problem or anything that has to be fixed, and then just go back to your breathing. And then today we'll talk about mindfulness of the body, which is really helpful for dealing with emotions, working with emotions. So for now, I'd say just come back and if you need to somehow not just ignore the emotions entirely, so they're so strong, stay with the breath and breathe through the emotions or breathe with the emotions. And let the breathing be kind of the ballast of the ship that keeps it steady. And keep it that simple in the beginning, for this beginning of the course. If that's okay with you, that's the recommendation. Okay? Thank you. Some people find it a real relief to just stay with the breathing because it's a relief not to have to deal with things. you know, all kinds of things come up, problems, emotions, all kinds of things. And then if you get a lot of instructions, like from me or someone, you think, oh, stuff you have to do. And sometimes it's better to do very little. And sometimes in meditation, the less you do, the better. And that's one of the supports that the breath is. Just come back to your breathing so that you don't have to think about, solve, fix, make a problem of anything. Just breathe. Breathe through it. It's a great, great, great tool for meditation practice. And but then, so before I say something, anything else someone wants to say or ask? Yes.
Thank you. So when I tried meditation at home, I was looking for a quiet corner. And I have a room, I have a little fountain in my front yard, and the window of that room, I can open and hear the sound. So I thought that would be nice, just listening to the water and calming. And I found a lot of times that I was able to focus on the dropping of the water, the sound of the water, way more than on my breathing. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure, and I obviously tried to come back to my breathing. But then, so it was like a struggle in my mind whether I should just kind of continue to just focus on the sound of the water, uh-huh, and just be there. And my mind was not as wandering, or just keep trying to come back to the breathing.
Great, good, very good question. So it's very nice you asked that question, because it leads right into one of the things I want to teach today. So even though I think it's very helpful to stay with the breath and use the breath as really the anchor to the present moment, the core principle of this mindfulness practice is we pay attention to what's happening, and because there can be many things happening at once, we pay attention to whatever is predominant, whatever is most compelling. And that can be anything in the human experience. So if what's most predominant or compelling are the body sensations, we bring our attention there. If it's emotions, we bring attention there. If it's thoughts, we bring it there. And if it's sounds, we bring it there. And what we're learning to do over time is to learn to bring a kind of very special kind of attention, this mindfulness attention, to all aspects of our lives. And so if the sound of the water dripping is more compelling than your breath, there's no need to struggle. And that's when people think they have to stay with the breath, then sometimes people struggle between the breath and what's calling to their attention. And so you can just let go of the breath and let the dripping do what's called listening meditation. And some people can get very peaceful and concentrated just doing sound meditation, listening to it. It's quite valid as a meditation subject. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Maybe one more, if anyone has anything. Yeah, so when I was in practicing in Burma, I did a long period of practice in a monastery there, doing this practice I'm teaching you here. And after, it was kind of the second place I really got introduced to this practice, and so I was still learning it in some ways. And one day I was doing the practice, and I had a realization, I had an understanding. Understanding was that when I'm clearly mindful, clearly aware, just aware, without judging something, without being for or against it, without trying to fix it, without trying to get rid of it, just letting it be there, just aware as it is, that there's a freedom to found there. There's a freedom from entanglement, from obsessing, from doing, from judging. And that freedom was that simple freedom was deeply, deeply satisfying, and it kind of nourished and fed something very deep inside my heart, my body. Just it was quite something to feel this, kind of like the weight had been lifted that I carried with me around me. So that was quite something to, when I'm really mindful, and so that made me happy. But then on the heels of that, I understood something else. And that is that it's possible, theoretically, to bring that quality of clear awareness to any experience I had as a human being, anything whatsoever. And then I got really happy, because then I thought, well, then, in theory at least, I can be free anywhere at any time, in any situation. There can be that kind of freedom. And the possibility of seeing this kind of freedom in all circumstances inspired me greatly. So the potential of this mindfulness practice is not just simply it helps us to relax or de-stress or find some relief or some insight about us, but it's really a profound capacity to discover how to let drop all the burdens we carry with us, all the obsessions we carry, all the resentments, all the fears, all the kind of, you know, all the ways in which we're gripped and caught by the things. To the simple act of clearly seeing, clearly knowing what's happening. So if I ring the bell, it's possible to hear that bell and just hear it. And in the hearing, to just hear it so simply that you don't even think it's a bell. You don't even have that label. You could, it's pretty innocent, but just hearing. It's also possible to hear the bell and immediately say, that's a nice sound, I want that, I wonder how I can get it. Or, what is this guy doing up there ringing bells? You know, this is a Wednesday evening, you know, I want something really serious and something, you know, profound, and bell ringing is not profound. You know, or, you know, you can, all kinds of thoughts, reactions come up. And in those thoughts and the reactions, there's not going to be a lot of freedom. But to just allow something just be there, something as innocent as a bell, just let it be very simple for a while before we come into our interpretations, our judgments, and desires, can be a great relief from the way that we sometimes are in kind of perpetual reactivity, perpetual preoccupation with things in the world. So learning to be mindful is also learning to put down or give a break to, give a vacation to, some of the usual ways in which we are operating and thinking. And I'd like to give you a little analogy that I learned many years ago when I was teaching a retreat with some other Buddhist teachers, the silent meditation retreat. And the people in retreat were all silent, but it was in November, and back then the 49ers were doing really well. And so the teachers went into the staff room, and they were watching this 49ers game. So it was kind of a strange juxtaposition of... You know, we didn't exactly want everyone to know we were watching TV, but it was important, right, the 49ers. So I didn't know much about football. It wasn't really my thing, but I went along with my friends. And so we were watching the football game. And when there was a commercial, the teacher had the remote pushed mute, which seemed like a reasonable thing to do. And we talked during the commercial. When the commercial ended, we stopped talking and we turned our attention to the game. But the guy who had the remote didn't unmute it. And I knew he was a mindfulness teacher, so I knew that he could tell. We were looking at a silent TV. And so I did, you know, what this training of mindfulness, one of the things it teaches is curiosity. So I said, oh, this is interesting. What's this about? Rather than complaining, nudging him, she's like, okay, what's this about? What's going on? So I watched the game without any sound. And without the sound, I could follow the game well enough. And these guys, they line up and they fall down. Every once in a while, they line up and someone seems to run and they seem to get past a few people. That's nice. You see them crossing these white lines. That's very nice. And then someone comes out from the side or something and tackles the person and they fall down, and that's too bad. And, you know, that's fine. But then after a while, the teacher unmuted the TV. And then I was really struck by the difference when there was a sound. And then there was the primary sound that I could tell that really got me was the commentator, the sportscaster, who I think's job description is to get people into the game, excited for the game. And suddenly it wasn't just, oh, look, he's crossing those lines. Isn't that nice? I think he's going in the right direction. And I think he might make it. It's like, you know, he's crossed the 50, the 40, oh my, you know, something, you know, you know, I felt like I want to stand up almost, and because of the sportscaster, right? And my experience of the game, ordinarily, I would not separate out the commentary from the game. When you watch a movie that has mood music, and it's a beautiful, idyllic, pastoral scene in the woods, it's so nice. You feel like, oh, this is like Bambi's going to come out. It's so nice. Oh. And then there's this ominous music, and your hair stands up because you know something's going to happen. You know? And so the music, which someone has added to the forest, right? We bring those together, and we don't see them as separate. And our experience of the forest is entangled with the mood music. Someone wants to give us a mood. So the experience of our life is that we often carry with us a commentator in our head. And that commentating on what's going on is often not seen as being distinct from what's actually happening in the moment, the experience of the moment. Sometimes we do more than commentary. We add mood music to it, or moods to the top of it. And we also we don't see how our mood becomes a filter for how we experience, how we see what's happening around us. And we think that the mood and the experience is the same thing, or we think the how we see it through the mood is what's happening out there. And it certainly makes life more exciting this way, but it also makes us less free and much more reactive, much more troubled by the world around us. And sometimes we cause a lot of trouble in the world because we misinterpret what's out there, because we're seeing it through our commentary, our judgments and all that. So one of the functions of mindfulness practice is to learn how to be simply aware enough, clearly enough aware, be settled enough to be able to tease apart the commentary from the direct experience. So if I'm sitting here meditating on my breathing, and my breathing is shallow, a simple awareness would be, there's a shallow breathing. That's interesting. Or as I said earlier, the kind of basic approach would be curious. Oh, what's this like, shallow breathing? Just like that. Just, what's this, shallow breathing? The commentary would be, I'm in California, the home of Esalen. It's this very spiritual state where people have long, deep breaths when they're spiritual, and I'm a spiritual failure. That's the commentary. Put you, the breathing, and the commentary together, then, oh, once again, I'm failing at something. I'm supposed to have this nice, deep, spiritual breath, and I just have this poor, shallow breath, and boy, am I ever a loser. Your life is a lot easier if you have a shallow breath, and all you do is say, oh, look at this, it's a shallow breath. No conclusions, nothing more. So to be able to tease apart and see, oh, here's the shallow breath, and here's my judgments, my comments about it, and see them as distinct, gives you a lot of power, tremendous advantage. And that is, now you can kind of live between those two and choose which you focus on, or not give a lot of credence or a lot of power to the commentary. Just say, oh, it's just a thought, just an idea. I don't have to believe it. It doesn't have to push me around. Let me just go stay with a shallow breath. It's okay to have a shallow breath, and let's just breathe shallowly. And it can go the opposite way, right, too, right? You're having the most beautiful, profound, deep, relaxed, sweet breath you can ever imagine. Oh. And the commentary is, I've made it. I'm sure I'll be the next great teacher of our age, or something, right? And then we take that commentary and we don't see it as being, we kind of mix it all together and we believe it. But if you just see it as commentary, just let it be. You don't have to get involved in it. It's very, very powerful. Your life will be a lot freer, and you make wiser choices of how you live your life. So in 2 weeks, we'll talk about more specifically about mindfulness of thinking. So we'll go into more depth with that. But for today, I wanted to make this a distinction between the commentary we make and the experience we have. And that's an introduction to what we're going to do now, which is to do a meditation that begins with just simple meditation on the breathing, like we did last week. And then I'm going to introduce to you mindfulness of the body. And as a as a kind of preface to this meditation, I'd like to say that, repeat what I said earlier, that what we pay attention to in mindfulness meditation is whatever is most compelling. And if nothing is particularly compelling, then we choose, we give some emphasis to the breathing. Stay with the breathing whenever you can. It's the default. But if the body becomes compelling, which sooner or later it will, either because it gets uncomfortable or very nice, very good feelings, then you can let go of the breath and bring your attention to the experience you have in your body. And the idea is to bring the same kind of clear attention, non-reactive attention, that doesn't judge the experience, but just learns to be with it. And it can be challenging to learn to do that when things are uncomfortable, but it's very powerful. And it's one of the things, I was just thinking about this today in myself, how much my early training in Buddhism, learning to do this, of sitting with discomfort, has been a foundation for me to go through discomfort the rest of my adult life. And when things have kind of become uncomfortable now, I call on what I learned 40 years ago. It really made a big difference in my life. I can't imagine my life without it. So we'll do a little meditation. And so if you'd like to stand and stretch for 30 seconds so you kind of feel a little bit fresh for sitting, you're welcome to. And all we have to do is mute the television. Now there's me, the television, and cell phones. Taking a comfortable but alert posture. Maybe letting yourself be a little bit more alert with your spine, your back, your chest, sitting a little more upright than usual. It can be particularly useful if you're tired to sit up a little straighter. And then gently close your eyes. And take a moment just to check in to your own body. How are you now? What sensations, what feelings, what's happening in your body as you sit here? And as you sit with your body and recognizing what's happening, is there commentary about it? Judgments, reactions, concerns? And if there is, can you gently tease apart the experience of your body in and of itself from the commentary that's maybe up there in the control tower? And then, staying in your body, take a few long, slow, deep breaths to make a stronger connection to your body. As you breathe in, to feel the expansion of your rib cage and lifting of your shoulders, almost like a massage from the inside. And as you exhale, relax. Sit. And then letting your breathing return to normal. Scan through your body and see if you can find any places that would be useful to relax. Perhaps you can soften in your shoulders, releasing them a bit as you exhale. Softening in your chest as you exhale. And softening the belly. And it can be useful in meditation for periodically just check in with your belly to see if you can keep it soft so it hangs forward and down. It's relaxed. And if it doesn't want to stay that relaxed, that's fine. Then don't worry about it. Within your body, as part of your body, becoming aware of how your body breathes. How your body experiences breathing. And notice where in your body the breathing is most pronounced or easiest to notice. Is it the movements of your chest? The movements of your belly? The sensation of the air going in and out through the nostrils? And then start to kind of rest or hang out with the experience of breathing. And then experiment with having your awareness be really simple. Just breathing, teasing apart judgments, commentary, being curious about what the experience of breathing is. Every time you exhale, remembering to let go of your thoughts. breathing in and breathing out. When you notice your mind wanders off in thought, it's okay. But then as soon as you notice you're thinking a lot, come back to your breathing. Begin again. And if it's helpful, you might very gently, softly say the word in as you breathe in, out as you exhale, just as a way to stay on track, to stay with your breaths one after the other. Noticing any tendency to get involved in commentary. And when you notice it, choose your breathing instead. The rhythm of it. The shifting sensations of breathing in and breathing out. And then, to switch now to the body, you can let go of attention to your breathing. And then let your attention go to the strongest sensation in your body. So bring that under the gaze of your awareness. And it can be a pleasant sensation or an unpleasant one, doesn't matter. But bring your attention to the strongest sensation in the body and place your attention in that part of your body. And very gently, feel it gently, see if you can experiment with having a simple awareness of it, almost as if there's no problem. Separating the commentary, the reactions, separating out the mood music that might be there with it, and the simplicity of just a sensation in and of itself, as if you've never felt it before and you're discovering it for the first time, as if it's allowed to be there, and just feel it. might be helpful, the idea to give space for the sensations to be there. And notice what happens to it. Does it get stronger or weaker? Does it move or shift in any way? If it fades away, go find another strong sensation in your body to hang out with, just to be mindful of. Just as with breathing, sometimes we say in and out to stay present with the breathing. So with sensations of the body, sometimes you can label it, quiet, soft label in the mind. Whatever it might be, whatever might characterize it, warmth, pressure, tightness, pain, pleasure. Not to judge it, but just very simply to name it, to help you stay there and just feel it. Separating out the commentary so you can just be with the simplicity of what's happening in your body. And then letting go of that, come back for the last minute here to your breathing. Breathe mindfully, meaning breathe with awareness of breathing, feeling the experience in your body of breathing. And then to end the sitting, take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Feel your body, feel your chair or the cushion. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So I have trained in Buddhism in many monasteries in America and Japan and Southeast Asia. And one of the common characteristics of the different trainings in many different Buddhist places is the tremendous emphasis on being embodied, for being present in your body. And a lot of the training in Buddhism comes from being in touch with your body, being mindful of your body. So much so that sometimes I kind of, maybe a little bit jokingly, but kind of wish that we hadn't translated the Buddhist word that we use for mindfulness into the word mindfulness. Because the original word is sati, and nothing in it about mind. But somehow coming to America, or to the West, we like mind, and so we translate it as mindfulness. And I would have preferred if we'd chosen bodyfulness, because of how important it is to be connected to your body. The body is, in Buddhism, Buddhist understanding of our body, is that the body's not a thing. It's not like a solid chunk of things that you unfortunately have to kind of, you know, haul around with you to get around or something. Our life flows through our body, and the body is not a thing, it's a process. And it's a process of sentience, of awareness, of sensations, of there's a lot of different nerves in our body, a lot of different processes that get activated by the nerves that are there. There's connections between the nerves, the brain, our emotional life, and our muscles, and what happens to our muscles, how they tighten and loosen. Our blood flows in different ways, depending on what's happening with our inner life. The body is a very alive and active place. And so one of the things we're trying to do in Buddhism is to begin to drop into our body so that place of aliveness and processing and movement and flowing can happen more in a more harmonious, healthy way, and provide us with some of the important information we need for helping us become free, helping us have this mindfulness, this awareness, be freer. So this coming back into your body over and over again, and it's one of the great blessings of this practice is developing a mindfulness of the body so that it comes second nature to check in with your body, to be present for your body. I think it's probably fair to say that we have a culture here in California that is probably more disembodied than much of human history. You know, I think the screens help a lot with that, and kind of work we do so oftentimes with screens for some people. And for other reasons why, you know, there's such an emphasis on the mind and experiences and thinking and all that. But awareness itself, attention itself, our ability to pay careful, alert attention to ourselves and to the world around us is greatly supported by being present in our body. So in a very simple way, the instructions here for this kind of, the basic instruction here for this kind of practice is we stay with our breath, which is considered to be part of the body, a very important part of it. That's like the home for the mindfulness meditation. So we come home to the breath until something else becomes compelling. And when the body becomes compelling, then you can let go of the breathing and then bring your attention to that experience in your body. Now, some people are quite surprised by this when the experience in their body is uncomfortable. And I've actually had people, and that never happened to me, but I've had colleagues who gave that same instruction, you know, go feel your strongest sensation in your body, and happened to be the person experiencing pain. And then the person got really angry at the teacher because they were doing a practice to not have pain, and then they're told to feel it. It's counterintuitive, you know, you're not supposed to be feeling the pain. But but the idea is to learn how to be present for whatever is. And if what is pain, it's a fantastic thing to learn how to have non-reactive attention to pain. We're not afraid of it, we're not attacking it, we're not having self-pity because of it. We're just kind of very simple, just feeling the pain in the simplicity of the pain. And sometimes the pain goes away or changes its nature when we're that simple to it, we're not reacting to it or tensing it around it. I saw it in one of my early retreats. I had a lot of knee pain when I sat this way. And I was doing Zen practice where you weren't supposed to move during the course of the meditation. And this meditation I'm teaching you here, you're allowed to move if you need to. So this is not like, you know, the kind of boot camp that sometimes is in Zen. But we weren't supposed to move. And so I had a lot of knee pain. And what I noticed was that every time I had self-pity, my muscles around my knee would tense up a little bit. And if I let go of the self-pity, they'd relax. And sometimes the pain was so strong, the only way I could survive was I had to be really attentive not to have any self-pity arise. So I had to be, I had to ride my mind really closely. And any little movement towards self-pity, let go, let go. And then I could manage with the pain because I wasn't tightening up. So the idea is to be really simple with it, learn how to do that. As we learn to, but it doesn't have to be painful sensations, they can be pleasant sensations, all kinds of sensations can come up. You can be sitting here and you have the breeze of the air conditioner, and that, you know, maybe it was uncomfortable, but maybe it's, for some of you, maybe it was nice to feel, but that was the compelling sensation, so you just feel it. You know, that becomes your meditation practice, breeze of an air conditioner. And then don't have any commentary, but try to just be, that's a present moment experience, and so you're cultivating your ability to be present and to be present on that experience. During that meditation, I asked you to do this, to turn and feel this most compelling sensation. What happened to some of you when you did that? Nice to hear some different range of things that might have happened. And there's no need to be shy. In Buddhism, they say you get a lot of merit for sharing your meditation experience and asking questions. So if you, any of you feel a shortage of merit, this is an easy way.
The stiffness in my back, when I paid attention to it, started to ease, which I enjoyed over time.
Oh, great.
So I became more comfortable to sit up upright instead of slouching. I enjoyed that.
Great. Wonderful. So that's one of the options that can happen. We bring our attention to something like stiffness and pain, and something begins to loosen up, to relax, to soften around it. Sometimes the way we hold is somewhat unconscious or kind of, we don't really know what we're doing, but we're holding maybe tight. And when we bring attention to it, the holding lets go. Great. Please.
You start to diagnose potential problems.
Yes, kind of I have a good diagnosis. I have a very good diagnosis for you. You're human. And these things come with being human.
I felt my leg go to sleep, and I just imagined what you would say. Oh, my leg is asleep. Okay. And it just kind of went away.
And how is that different?
I didn't judge it.
Didn't judge it. And normally you would be judging it?
Yes, I would judge it. Oh, it's painful. Ooh. And I just imagine what you would be saying. That helped.
And that was easier for your mind, just to kind of relax. Very nice. Lovely. I saw your hand.
I think naturally my mind likes to range to different things, so it was almost a release to say, I don't have to stay with the breath anymore. I can let it go somewhere else. It was more like a release for me.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then did you bring your attention to your body, some parts of your body?
Yeah, I had, you know, various things going on, so that wasn't hard to do. So it felt more like a relief to not have to. Sometimes I feel like I struggle staying with the breath.
Mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, so it's not necessary to struggle with the breath. And what happens to some people is they open up their attention to the body, and different things happen, and you bring your attention to different things. And after a while, you come back to the breathing. And some people, because the breath is one of the biggest movements in the body when you're sitting still, that sometimes after a while, that becomes compelling. But rather than forcing your attention on the breathing, you arrive at it because you follow this journey through the body to come to that. Someone else?
I actually had a tickle on my cheek, and so I just wanted to move. So it's nice to hear you say that you are allowed to move, actually. But I found I was chasing it, so to speak.
Yeah. So it's your choice, like with a tickle or an itch, whether you scratch it or move or something. It's very interesting to if you have the interest and the stamina for it, to not give in to a tickle or an itch, and just sit with it. It's maybe uncomfortable, but it's an exercise in learning how to be non-reactive, learning not to give in to something. Just stay present. And I think, as far as I know, no one has died from a tickle or an itch. In Thailand, when I was there, there was it's probably, you know, one of the more common meditation subjects in Thailand, as far as I could tell from my experience, is the mosquito. And you hear the buzz, and it's a little bit, you know, listening meditation, buzz. And then you do the itch meditation, kind of you feel a little, you know, it walks around your cheek, feel it there, and then you don't feel anything for a while, and you realize, you know what that's it means. It means it's gone in with its, and then you got numb, and then you hear it, bzzz, goes away. And by the time, if you're really there, right there, it's so compelling, just stay with it, by the time it goes away, you find yourself quite concentrated. And all the concerns you had about what you should have for dinner, and how you should get a better job, or a better spouse, or something, you know, all these things you were thinking about, are just vanished. Because you're just like right there for that experience. And so part of what's very interesting around this mindfulness of the body thing, it's a way to bring attention to the body in a simple way, and not having it complicated by reactions and judgments and all these things. Just be with the body. It's also a training to learn that whatever our experience is, we can bring this useful mind attention to anything at all, but now we start with the body. It's also helpful because the experiences of the body have greater, in some ways have very important value. It's kind of like the body begins to wake up. And we start having more heightened attention, and we learn what's happening in the body. And the more we can kind of understand what's happening, be aware of what's happening in the body, it tends to move the body into homeostasis or to health. If you kind of are not paying attention to your shoulders, and your shoulders are up by your ear all day long, and then someone says, you know, you should notice your body, only then do you notice how you're holding your shoulders, and then you relax. Or the body, you just feel it wants to relax. And so, but if you don't pay attention to your body, you're not going to do it. You're going to continue being concerned about something. And so there are gross things that we're holding, but there's also a lot of very subtle ways in which we hold the muscles in our body that begin to release as we begin to be aware of it. We don't have to do the releasing. Just by being aware, it makes space and things begin to happen. The body is always in the present moment. Your mind is only in the present moment sometimes. And the idea is here in meditation is to have the body and the mind be in the same place at the same time. And so if your mind is on vacation in San Diego and you're here at IMC, you could go to San Diego. It's a bit of a trip, but you can drive down there and be there by the morning. But if once you get there, there's no guarantee your mind's going to be there still. By that time, it might be in Seattle. So the way we try to bring the mind and the body together so they work in harmony is we bring the mind to the body. And the body's always here waiting for you. And so come in and come back and feel your body. And what I hope is as you do this, you start discovering how valuable it is to do that, how much of your life comes alive, how much you learn about yourself in the process, and how much gets freed up that's often held, kind of held or tightened up. So the simple instructions are stay with the breath until something in the body becomes compelling. And compelling means it's more compelling than the breath. If it's just something in the body but it's not particularly compelling, just let it be in the background. Just stay with the breath. But once something is, and if you, something becomes compelling and you try to stay with the breath, then you have this tug of war between the compelling thing that wants your attention and you're trying to stay with the breath. And that tension of that tug of war is not needed. Then you just let go of the breath and bring your attention to the experience of your body. It can be helpful to label it, to have very simple, quiet tightness, warmth, pulling, pleasure, whatever it might be. Very simple. And part of the value of that is to keep you there. You say it repeatedly, just, oh, warmth, warmth, warmth. Just to, so you don't wander off so easily. The mind doesn't drift off into thought so easily. But also, there's a way in which by simply naming it, it keeps you a little bit separate from it, a little bit kind of not entangled or caught up in the thoughts of it. It helps you, some can help you keep really stay really simple with it and a little bit free. But it has to be a very soft little voice in the back of the mind that labels it. And then feel it. Just be with it. You can be curious about it. What is this experience? Oftentimes, we live in the concepts of things, the ideas of things, and so we don't really feel something directly. And so one of the concepts we have is pain. And pain is not a single thing. Pain is a composite of many things, many different factors that come together and get organized in the brain as something we call pain. But if you, as a concept of pain. But if you can really be quiet and still and really feel this pain in your body, just don't react to it, just be very simple with it. Sometimes the composite element, different elements of the pain begin to kind of show themselves, and some of them begin to fall away, and the pain goes away. Or changes or shifts. What we thought was pain becomes something else. So, for example, one of the things that strengthens pain is fear. And if you can be present without the fear, then sometimes the pain goes away. And so it's not uncommon experience for someone to have pain until they go to the doctor and the doctor gives them the diagnosis. And then they know what it is. Oh, okay, now I know. And the only thing that changed was the diagnosis, not the, you know, thing else. Because part of pain is a mental phenomenon. And so to learn to be really simple, just feel it, shifts and change what goes on. And then at some point, if it fades away, no longer compelling, then we go back to the breathing. If it stays compelling, it's fine to spend 10, 15, 20 minutes on what's happening in the body. Just looking at it, being with it, maybe looking at it from different angles, feeling it the way, and noticing what happens. Is it pulsing? Is it vibrating? Is it shifting? Is it changing? What are some of the sub-sensations? If I get close to it and see, maybe it's made up of parts, and what's going on in different parts of my body? Some people, when they really get close to pain in their body, really feel the pain as opposed to think about the pain. The pain sometimes is discovered is not, it's not solid, but it's shifting and changing and dancing around. There might be a pain in your knee, a little square centimeter of area of pain, but if you bring careful attention into that little centimeter, you might see that it's jumping around in that little centimeter, and it's flashing on and off, very fast. And it's not so solid as the way we thought, but if we stay at a distance from it and our thoughts about it and self-pity of it, then it has a kind of very solid, big kind of feeling of it. But to go in and feel, oh, it's a dance. Look at that. The sensations are, you know, flashing in and out of existence. It's a kaleidoscope of things. And then watch what happens when that goes on. Is this making some sense? Do you have any questions about that? Anything you need clarification or... Because if you don't, we'll do another meditation. A little one. And we'll do one with an exercise. Okay, so if you want to stand for 30 seconds, especially on the floor or something, shake out your legs. So we're going to start with a little exercise to might give you a better sense of how to do this mindfulness of the body thing. And then we'll transition into kind of this simple, basic meditation with the breathing and for a little while. So in order to do this exercise, though, get into a meditation posture. So And close your eyes. And then bring your hand, your attention into your right hand. And then begin feeling the sensations in your right hand. You might feel the sensations on the palm of your hand. The back of the hand. The fingers. There might be pulsing, vibration, throbbing. There might be warmth and coolness. Tingling. Pressure. Weight. There might be sensations of hardness and softness. And as you stay in your right hand, notice how the particular sensations of the hand that are there, how they shift and change. Sometimes you're aware of one kind of sensation, then another. Maybe sometimes the back, more the back of the hand, sometimes the fingers, sometimes the palm. And then as you continue to feel the sensations of your right hand, see if you can notice if you're straining to pay attention, or if you're paying attention reluctantly. And see if you can find the middle path. A very willing awareness that's relaxed, but interested. So then, look around your body and find the strongest sensation in your body that's not your hand. And in the area of your body where that sensation is, not the particular sensation, but that area, tune into the sensations that are there, just like you did for your hand, with the same middle path, middle way kind of attention. Curious, interested, feeling it. Noticing it, maybe the shifting, changing sensations there. Being very simple. And then now, letting go of that, bring your attention to that part of your body where you mostly were experiencing your breathing. In the belly or the chest or the nostril, kind of general area where you experience breathing. In the same way as you felt your hand, feel that area, feel the sensations that are there. Feel how the sensations change with the inhalation and exhalation. Notice how the sensations are different as you breathe in from when you breathe out. And then continue to stay with your breathing unless some sensation in your body is more compelling. And if some sensation is more compelling, bring your attention to it in a simple way and feel it the same way you felt your hand, letting it be there. And it might be good enough to stay with it for a few seconds, maybe a little longer. And then it might be fine to go back to your breathing. Or maybe you need to stay longer than that to really get to know it because it's so compelling. If you find yourself thinking a lot, see if you can relax the thinking muscle. Relax your brain. And then begin again with your breathing. If you can let go of your thoughts and come back to your breathing, great. If you have trouble letting go of your thoughts, see if you can let your thoughts recede to the background and let the experience of breathing be in the foreground. And then to end this sitting, again, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Feel your body. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Many meditation practices have a particular object of attention that you stay with all the time. Sometimes it could be the breath, sometimes a mantra, different things. You stay with that thing. And often that's useful to developing concentration. The mindfulness practice has a primary home base for practice, which is the breathing, but it's not fixed on that thing. The object of meditation can shift and change depending on what's predominant. And so if something else is more predominant than the breathing, then that becomes the focus of attention. So it can be the body, it can be the emotions and thoughts, it can be sounds, it can be many different things. For now, I think it's best to kind of get this hang of it is try to keep it simple and just continue to stay with your breathing as you meditate. And then open up to the body. And if there's compelling sensation in the body, just feel those and then come back to your breathing. If you have emotions, if you're a little bit, ahead of the curve here, then just breathe with that. Just see if you can just let it be in the background for now. Know that it's coming next week. Talk about emotions. And then thoughts also. Some of you are, prodigies. You are way ahead of us here. And so we'll do that in 2 weeks. But it's easier to keep it simple, just breath and body if you can. And then we build on that, and that supports us to be able to do emotions. So was that helpful for some of you to do this little exercise with a hand to get a sense of how to be aware of your body and what goes on? Anybody want to say something about how it was helpful or what you learned from that? Yes, and then.
So, I want to know if you can move your hand. If you can move, like you're talking about the hand, does it have to be solid on your leg, or can you move it to feel
more. To do the exercise?
Yes, to do the exercise. You know, like in yoga where you move to feel your body more.
Yeah, yeah.
So is that okay to do that?
Oh, sure. I think it's
completely. I mean, when you're sitting and meditating.
When you're meditating. I see. So that was. I just did that as an exercise to get you a sense, a hang of it. But generally, meditation, we don't move at all, and we content ourselves with whatever is there. And we don't try to make more, mm-hmm. and we don't try to use props, you know, to get ourselves, you know, more attentive, more. But we just take what's given to us. It's something very. There's very something very significant, and I think very meaningful, about processing our life as it appears to us when we sit in a basically comfortable posture, hopefully, and be still. Once we start moving, it gets more complicated much more quickly. There's something very simple or something very... When we're not the agent of change to make something happen, then the inner life has a chance to unfold and show us what's going on, as opposed to us being in charge, wanting to get something to happen. So we put a lot of value when you're meditating to don't do anything extra. Don't breathe extra. Don't like yogic breathing. Don't listen to mood music to get you calm. Don't do yoga while you're meditating in order to feel yourself better. Just be content with how it is. And then with time, if there's going to be more sensations, more things to be aware of, they'll show themselves in their own time. And so there's a lot of patience in this practice that your inner life knows better than you what you need to pay attention to. And so just trust that what's unfolding is the right thing. And that's what I found in my practice and being a teacher for many people, that there is a kind of inner intelligence maybe, or some inner process or inner priority that kind of is really worthwhile trusting. That's different than what we think we need, what we think needs to happen, and what we think we need to get rid of. And so one of the great things for many people of this practice is the willingness and the patience just to allow things to be as they are. And so if you're moving your hands to have more sensations, you're not doing that actually. Does that make sense? So it's up to you though. Yes, you can if you want. Right behind you.
I have a related question. So when I notice my body, I usually notice my back. So I'm not sure whether that's because my posture was wrong or not as comfortable as I could be. So I struggle whether I should adjust or just observe the pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good question. If you're not sure, sometimes you have a clear signal, oh, this is not good. And if you're wondering if you're hurting yourself, then change your posture. But if you don't think you're hurting yourself and... just stay with it for a while until you get a clear signal. You think it's time to move. And one clear signal is you're getting really discouraged. There's no need to sit so far that you get discouraged with it. Then you should shift and change. But if you feel, oh, this is an opportunity, yes, I think I'd like to try to develop the practice with this now, stay with it. We only sat there for about 10 minutes. And so it's okay to give 10 minutes of your life to just feeling it. And then maybe next time you meditate, sit down to meditate, maybe you try adjusting your posture a little differently and find a different way and all that. But if you're going to move every time you feel discomfort, see, it's to sit up straight like this for many people is a very different posture than they usually sit. So some muscles that are weak get tired quickly. Muscles that are a bit tight begin to release, and as they release, they feel painful. And so there's a whole process of change that goes on that... it's fine, just let it unfolding on its own. But if every time we feel pain, we have to adjust it and fix it, then we don't allow the conditioning, that the releasing that to happen. Yeah, here.
So I had two very interesting experiences trying to feel my body. The first one was when you asked us to move from breath to feeling body. I felt that my teeth were grinding, and I had not realized that.
Uh-huh.
And I started focusing on it, and the intensity actually kept growing.
Yes.
And it kept growing and it kept growing, and I wasn't sure what am I supposed to do, so I was just listening. But so what meaning? I'm just lost, like, so yeah, I felt the grinding, but it just kept growing. And
yeah, so something like grinding your teeth. So what happens sometimes when people bring attention to something uncomfortable in their body, or even or comfortable things, sometimes the mindfulness works as a magnifying glass. And it actually gets stronger rather than weaker before it fades away. And so part of the process is just to go along with that, just to be present for it. With the grinding of the teeth, if you're actually grinding your teeth, which is a muscular thing, the muscles are tightening up, then sometimes the kind of self-consciousness maybe, or the sense of concern that might be behind the grinding, could actually get accentuated by knowing about it, bringing attention to it. And so you might actually be grinding it harder, which is not a good idea. Mm. So then one of the great things to do in meditation, if you have any tendency like this, I have a tight jaw, is drop your mouth really open in the most unbecoming way. And then drop it open, and then float your teeth back together so they just barely touch. Just float them gently up. So that can maybe help.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, because you can, you know, break your teeth if you grind too hard.
That's true.
But the chances are, if you are in fact grinding your teeth in meditation, chances are you're probably also doing it at night. So learning to get a handle of it here, and feeling where the tension is. So what you might want to do is turn the tension away from the grinding to, if the muscles are tight, begin tuning into that and letting them release and relax. Yes.
I'm not feeling the intense sensations, but I'm so relaxed that I think I'm dozing off in between. Is that something anybody's going
yes.
through?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
This is a common thing in meditation. As people get relaxed in meditation and calm, they sometimes will fall asleep. And sometimes they're sleepy anyway.
End of the day.
Yeah. And Americans are sleep deprived anyway, mostly. And more people in this country need sleep than they need meditation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sometimes we close our eyes and we're trying to catch up. But as we get calm, then we're more likely to do it, you know, to fall asleep. And so there's two things you can do around getting sleepy in meditation. Remember, one of the principles here is just bring attention to what's happening and be curious. So bring attention to the whole phenomena of being sleepy. Where do you feel sleep? Where are the physical sensations of sleepiness? Investigate. Feel the heavy eyes, the cheeks. Just kind of explore it. The other thing you can do is to bring a little more energy into the system, into your body and mind. You can sit up straighter. It's possible to open your eyes and keep them open about 45 degrees looking down on the floor. But having more light come into the eyes can keep you a little bit more awake. Or you can do a kind of brighten the mind. So you kind of pay a little more careful attention, more energy around paying attention. If you use these mental labels that I referred to earlier, like a simple word that keeps you... say those words a little bit faster. So rather than warmth, you'd say warmth. Just to get a little more energy in there until you kind of wake up. Okay, one more. Yes.
Or just like focusing on the hand thing that we did. We did it kind of consciously.
Yeah.
Should that be part of the regular practice, or should we keep it simple and just move our mind to whatever that's compelling?
Yeah, I recommend keeping it simple. That was just an exercise to give you the idea. So stay with your breathing, and then if some other sensation, some part of your body feels more compelling, then do the same kind of exercise we did with the hand in that part. But you don't have to go looking for something to do. Just wait until something comes knocking. Does that make sense? I kind of said this before, but kind of trust that whatever comes knocking that wants this attention, just trust that that's appropriate. That there's some unknown way in which that's appropriate, that you get to pay attention to that today. So one of the things you can pay attention to is sounds. And so rather than thinking of sounds as being a distraction, if the sounds are compelling, then the practice is to let go of whatever you're doing else, the breath or something, and bring your attention just to listening. The neighbor's dog is barking. you do barking meditation. You know, and just hear it bark, and or you hear the dripping rain or whatever it might be. You hear the train went by, right? You train meditation. Just hear the whistle, and so you don't have to feel bad that your mind gets pulled to the train signal. That means it's compelling, and then you just do same simple way listening meditation, hearing, as long as it's there. And some people find that it works really well to do a lot of hearing meditation. It kind of keeps them more interested in the present moment than the breathing. And it's a lot nicer. So I'll end with this principle. Then hopefully you'll understand now that in this practice, this form of meditation practice, there are no distractions. It's just something else to pay attention to. So you don't have to judge something as being wrong or shouldn't be happening. Oh no, this is interfering with my meditation. It is your meditation. If it's happening in the present moment, it becomes your meditation, it becomes what you bring your attention to. Any experience you have can be something you discover how to be mindful of, attentive to, in a free way, simple way. Separating out the commentary, just being simply for discovering what it's like to drop the burden, drop the preoccupation, the concern, just simple presence with this thing. And then you're free with that. The dog's barking next door. You can be free with that. So I know I said it was the last thing. I'll say one more thing, if you allow me to. A story of my teacher in Burma. So I had this very tough teacher. He was kind of like a bulldog, sergeant general kind of guy. And he kind of intimidated people because he was so tough and strong. And sometimes it's nice to be with teachers like that. And so he told us a story of when he started meditating. He was meditating in the monastery. He was a monk. And, you know, he was kind of, you know, he was given a roommate. And they shared a cell, shared a room. And he was just learning to kind of figure out this mindfulness thing that I'm teaching you here. But he was kind of determined, persistent. He was like a tough guy. So he was going to meditate extra. So he was going to meditate into the night. So he would meditate in bed, sitting upright. But he had a roommate who was a slacker. And this roommate would go to bed early and sleep. But what was hard for my teacher was his roommate snored. So for a while he was like, you know, oh, this guy, he's a slacker, and why was I given this room, and I shouldn't have a room like that. I'm serious, and he's not. And, you know, just caught up in this little world of thoughts, right, that can happen. And after a while he said, wait a minute. Everything can be an object of mindfulness. No, there's no distractions. So why don't I just... And so what's most compelling is the snoring. So he took the snoring as the object of his attention, to be in the present moment with the snoring, and learned how to be present for it without any reactions, without judgments, just the sound. And in doing that, he got really settled, really focused, really concentrated. And he said, that was the doorway into me understanding this practice. Was listening to my roommate snoring. So there are no distractions. There's just something else to pay attention to. So good luck. So next